Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for tuning in to Unscripted, presented by Be Unique Magazine, because an authentic life is unscripted. Be Unique is a 501c3 charity that works today to change tomorrow. Learn more at our website, beunique.org. That's BUNEKE.org. Did you know that Be Unique is a free, non-profit publication? We work today to change tomorrow by bringing you truly amazing guests like the one we'll introduce tonight, and by highlighting stories about people all over the world who will astound you. The free digital version is available 24/7 at beunique.org. That's BUNEKE.org.
Well, hello, everybody. This is your host, Mary Brotherton. I'm here with my co-host, Jennifer East. And tonight we have Doug White, who is our special guest. He is a leader in the nation's philanthropic community. He's an author of 5 books, a teacher and advisor to nonprofit organizations and philanthropists. Doug is the co-chair of the Foolproof Foundation's Walter Cronkite Project Committee and a governing board member of the Secular Coalition of America. He's the former director of Columbia University's Master of Science in Fundraising Management program, where, in addition to his extensive management responsibilities, he taught board governance, ethics, and fundraising. That's something we need to talk about. He's also the former academic director of New York University's Heyman Center for Philanthropy and Fundraising. He's been an advisor to BoardSource, the nation's leading organization dedicated to building exceptional nonprofit boards and inspiring board service. And most recently, he completed a comprehensive review of the media allegations against the Wounded Warrior Project, the first casualty. I'm having trouble with my words. This was a report addressing the allegations made against the Wounded Warrior Project in 2016. That report has been expanded into a book called Wounded Charity, and it was just recently published, and I think I already said, but that is bringing your total to 5, if I'm not correct. Is it not, Doug?
That is correct, Mary. It's a total of 5. It's hard to believe because each takes so much work, but yes, 5.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate being with you tonight.
You're very, very welcome. I know that you had mentioned that a lot of the criticism of the Wounded Warrior Project was unfounded. Can you tell us what the media got wrong about that charity?
Pretty much everything. The media, I have to say at the beginning, though, that I am not a critic in terms of what the media does wrong all the time. I have a faith in the media, all media. I feel that in general, reporters try to get things right, and it's a tough job. Journalism is not an easy profession, and I understand that there are going to be mistakes, and I also understand that there's going to be a point of view. No matter how you write something, there's going to be a point of view. So the idea of an objective story is pretty much a mythical objective for me. And the example I use when I teach is that if someone says that it's not raining, and someone else says it's sunny, they're basically both factually correct, but they're sending very different images out. And so
absolutely.
The job of a journalist is to try to capture the context and the truth of what did happen. And I think that for the most part, that does happen. Now, there's varying degrees within that, but I do believe that journalists make that effort. In this particular case, there were very large media organizations, both CBS News and the New York Times, who undertook to write a story about Wounded Warrior Project, which ended up to be pretty wrong on every count. And let me give you an example of what they said happened at Wounded Warrior Project that didn't happen. The allegation was that they were spending too much money on frivolous things like parties and booze, and not enough money on servicing the clientele they have, wounded veterans who come home from war. And of course, immediately the careful listener will hear the phrase "too much" and understand that that itself is a subjective phrase. But the idea was to show the Wounded Warrior Project was spending too much money on things that just didn't matter and not enough on what did matter. And this is the largest veterans organization in the United States. So let's really find out how they're doing things wrong. And so they said that they were spending 60 cents on the dollar as opposed to more for veterans. And this was just a terrible, terrible thing. So went the story. So there were two parts to just dissect that. One is that I would not say that 60 cents on the dollar is necessarily a bad thing, because you take a snapshot of that number and you don't get a full picture. And two, it wasn't 60 cents. It was closer to 80 cents. So they got that factually wrong. They got that factually wrong and narratively wrong. And so that was a big story. And that was the same story in the Times and on CBS. There was that. And then on top of that, they claimed that Steve Nardizzi, the CEO, had been frivolously spending money and earning too much money. And again, that phrase itself is, again, subjective, but an analysis of what people make at organizations that raise $400 million, which is where Wounded Warrior was at the time, he was making about what everybody else was making. Was it a lot of money? Well, yeah, it was. It was close to $500,000, a little bit less, but let's say $500,000. It was a lot of money. There's no question about that. But when you look at organizations that raise that kind of money, $400 million or so, he was right in the middle of it all. So was he making too much? Well, that's another question. But was he making too much relative to other people who are doing the similar work? And the answer was no. He was right in the middle of that. So then another part of the report said that they had spoken to someone who used to work at the IRS, and his complaint about Wounded Warrior Project is that they didn't show the people they were serving on their 990. The 990 is the organization's form they send to the IRS. And that's true, but there are two other things that need to be said in the context of that statement. One is there's no place on that 990, on that form, that asks who you're serving in terms of a large group of people. The question
exactly.
is not asked. And then on top of that, they do respond to that question, just not on the 990. They do show on their website the groups of people they're helping, and they have an extensive amount of information about their work. So CBS came off saying, oh, well, we see this charity spending so much money and it's being spent frivolously. We've interviewed 40 people and they all say the same thing. And they didn't say that they're all disgruntled ex-employees. And they were only able to get one person on camera to identify himself. And that was Eric Millett. And they basically based their story on his testimony, and it was really quite a travesty, because he came back from Afghanistan and he was injured. He had two categories of injury, what's called post-traumatic stress disorder and TBI, mm-hmm. which is traumatic brain injury. And I have to tell you that knowing that fact alone tells me we have a lot to thank to Eric Millett. There's no question in my mind that he has given a lot of his life for the ideals of this country. And you and I and everybody who listens and everybody else in the United States has a lot to thank him for. But
absolutely.
That said, CBS, I feel they used him. This is another issue for me personally. I feel they used him. He became very dissatisfied. There's no, we don't know why. He wouldn't speak with me. And he had been very, very happily employed at Wounded Warrior Project. And WWP, by the way, has a fair percentage, maybe 30 or 40% of its employees are wounded vets. And he was one of them and did a great job of talking about how great the organization was. And then all of a sudden, he turned, and there were, no one knows why. I think, you know, if I were to speculate, he got into this narrative that Wounded Warrior Project was spending too much money, and something was triggered, and he just became very much an enemy of the organization, which is too bad. But what's really too bad is that the organization, CBS, used him and created the entirety of the story around that. And the New York Times essentially did the same thing. They talked to other people too, but Dave Phillips, the author of the story in the Times, the reporter, did not use any of the information that was provided to him that was positive. Nothing was used on either CBS or in the New York Times that was positive. And I had a personal relationship with this story beforehand because even though I didn't know anything about Wounded Warrior Project, from an insider's perspective, I knew publicly what was going on. But Dave Phillips had called me some weeks earlier because he said he was doing a story. And he and I spoke nothing about this. We were talking about the normal give and take of growing a large organization very quickly and how important the organization was to the country and some of their challenges. But there were, and it was going to be an honest story. It was going to be, you know, there's some things that are wrong here, but they're working on it. There are a lot of challenges. There are a lot of successes, that kind of a thing. That was not the story that people read in the Times. And I think he was persuaded to, or he persuaded himself to change that narrative to more align the salaciousness of the CBS story with his. So a lot of that story was just plain old wrong. And I can't go through all of that. We don't have the time, but it's in the book. And it's just horrible how point by point by point, I think I had 13 or 14 points in that story that were just wrong or misleading. And was able to show from my own factual research where they were wrong and why they were wrong. And as I say, I think the world of journalism is a tough world, and in writing the book, I thought of myself as a journalist. If I'm going to critique something, then I'm going to be darn sure that I do my own research and make sure it's accurate. There's just a ton of stuff that was just wrong, and the organization was and continues to. It's not the same organization, but it's still a good organization. But when Eric Millett said that they're spending all their money on parties and booze and things like that, it was just incorrect, just a plain out false statement. And I attribute that to him not knowing really that much about the way charities are run. And I also think that neither CBS nor the New York Times know how charities are run. But one particular allegation hurt, and that was that he said that all of this money was being, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars were being spent on booze at conferences on WWP's dime. And the reason that hurts, the reason that's kind of a personal insult as opposed to just a general one, is that one of the reasons that veterans come back with difficulties is depression. And there are, on average, 22 veterans who take their lives every day. Now, that's a staggering, I mean, like, wow, that's profound. You know, it's like it takes the air out of the conversation. 22 per day. Well, one of the contributing factors to depression is alcoholism. And one of the major programs, and there were several, but one of the major programs at Wounded Warrior Project was designed to combat alcoholism. The fact of the matter is that over thousands and thousands of receipts at conferences for the national conferences for the Wounded Warrior Project, a total of two receipts totaling $10 over a 7-year period were found to have been charged to WWP. They had a very strict, and I think they still do, a very strict policy to ensure that they weren't promoting alcohol activity at all. Now, that isn't to say that people couldn't buy drinks on their own or that the board members wouldn't have drinks at their meetings, but it was a plain-out falsehood to suggest that Wounded Warrior Project would condone drinking at its gatherings and, on top of that, pay for anybody's drinks. So that was really, it wasn't the worst allegation in terms of dollars and cents, but it was sure hurtful given the mission of Wounded Warrior Project.
That's a shame.
Yeah, that's sad that they attacked them in such a profound, untrue, unfair way.
I believe so. And so then, I don't know if you're leading me to this, but I'm being led to think, why would they do that? What would CBS gain from this kind of journalism, or what would the New York Times gain? Well, as I said before, Dave Phillips was already doing a story that he was, I think, going to make a fair assessment of what was going on at the organization. And because it had grown so quickly and because its advertisements were on television so often, a lot of people in the United States knew of this organization and they thought it was great. And so it's easy to take the top dog and try to find fault with it. You see that with our presidential campaigning right now. The person who gets to be number one in the polls tends to be the one who is being criticized the most or being asked the most mm-hmm. difficult questions. And that's okay. That's part of being in the number one slot. And that's where WWP found itself and still does, by the way. But they were growing so quickly that the criticisms were starting to grow and grow. They were able to fight them off, and they did so. But that was one incentive, I think, where I think Dave Phillips was saying, oh, here's a great big organization. Let's take a look at it. I don't think he was going to go for the jugular or anything bad. But at the beginning, anyway, I think it was going to be a fairly well-balanced assessment of this large organization that does such good work. What happened was that CBS got wind of this fact. And they said, oh, ho, we want to do this story. And until Dave Phillips stopped talking to me, and he stopped talking to me because he understood where I was headed with my own research, before that time, he said that CBS was interested in this story, but he didn't know why. But then he said that 60 Minutes was going to do it, but they didn't have the time to do the proper research. Now, that particular phrase might not feel weird to the average person, but it felt weird to me because this was, as you probably are quite well aware, but for your listeners, this was called an evergreen story from the New York Times' perspective. There was no hook. There was no real need to get this out right away. And that was
no expiration date.
No expiration date. It's one of those stories that can, you know, live for a while, and editors have to be, you know, careful not to let it go too long. But there was nothing, you know, like we're listening to the impeachment hearings today. That's here and now news. And so you've got to report on that in the here and now. This was not that kind of story. So the idea was that he would put together this really long form piece. And CBS came along and they were going to do it quickly. And I was wondering, why did they feel the need to do it quickly? What was the rush? And Dave, at that point, said he didn't know. And so, and just not to be too cryptic here, he stopped talking to me because he understood that I was going to be criticizing his own journalism in the New York Times. And I account for this in the book too. So there's that story in there. But the question was, what's the rush? Why doesn't 60 Minutes have the time to do the proper research on this? And then on top of that, if the proper research can't be done by 60 Minutes, doesn't CBS News have the same research obligations as well if they're going to do a story? I mean, this is a national network, and so they would have the same obligation, it would seem to me. But no, this had to be done quickly. And clearly, based on the final product, it was done quickly and very badly. But so the question remained, why? And this was really crucial to me because I felt that the journalism was lacking, to be honest with you. I mean, even though I said at the beginning this is a tough gig, journalism itself, and I have a lot of sympathy for journalists, within that scope, I felt that this was a pretty poorly put together story on both the New York Times and the CBS News reports. And so why is that? Well, it turns out that one of the board members, this is going to be hard to understand, but I mean, not factually, but just like, how would something like this happen? One of the board members of WWP is also a senior executive at CBS News, or no, excuse me, CBS
Uh-oh.
Corporation. So one of the allegations was that they weren't filing their 990, the report that they have to give to the IRS. They weren't filing that correctly. Remember, I said at the beginning that it was 60 cents on the dollar, and they said 80 cents on the dollar, and so there was that disparity. And so they were saying that not only was it 60 cents as a bad thing because so much more was going to overhead, but that 60 cents on the, that they had been reporting 80 cents, and that was being incorrectly reported. Well, the person at the WWP board, this person, his name is Richard Jones, he was in charge of the finances. He was in charge of making sure that what was reported to the IRS was correct. So you have this bizarre situation where WWP is creating its financial reports, and all of those financial reports are being created correctly, by the way, I learned. And CBS is criticizing WWP for basically lying on its 990, on the information that has to go to the IRS. And the person who could have cleared it all up in a heartbeat was Richard Jones, and he didn't do it. And why he didn't do it is another, we'll get to that perhaps, but that's another story. But this was so bizarre to me to find out that there was this connection between WWP and CBS to begin with, and having CBS News trash WWP. Wait, what's going on there? So it was more than just a story about bad reporting, and it certainly was not a story about a bad charity. Today, I'll go down and talk to people in a cocktail party or where I get my haircut or at the coffee shop and just randomly say, have you ever heard of Wounded Warrior Project? And almost everybody has, Mary, almost everybody. And they said, well, that's that charity that, you know, it was that false charity. That was the charity where they were spending all that money. They were stealing the money. That's how people take a story, and then they extrapolate from that, and they think the worst. And now all of a sudden, this is the charity that spent or stole all this money, all these donor dollars. And so that's right now the narrative in people's minds, or a lot of people's minds. And the idea behind the report, as you mentioned earlier, and then what became the book, Wounded Charity, was to create a different narrative. Once a story is told, it cannot be untold. We all know that. So I know that that's not going to happen. But what I do try to do is say, okay, here's the real story. And I don't want to sound too haughty when I say the real story, because as I said earlier, a lot of journalism is subjective. And so there's going to be some kind of vague boundaries around what people call truth. But I do believe that this effort was a better representation of trying to find the truth than what we saw in either the CBS stories or the New York Times stories.
Understood. I mean, it's like you have to dig a little bit to get to the answer, and I think that's vital.
It is.
I have a question.
And I also, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jen. No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I you know, it's just a shame that, you know, I can just imagine all the efforts that it took to get Wounded Warrior to where it was at that time. And to be honest, when I was one of those folks that when I heard the report and I remember seeing, you know, it's like every other commercial seemed to have Wounded Warrior in the middle of the day if you ever had your television on. And I'm an artist, so I a lot of times keep my television on just for a company. Not that I'm really even watching, but anyways, and I just remember that all happening. And when I hear what you're saying now, it's like, it's just such a shame. I didn't even know, honestly, that all this controversy was going on, because you do trust the media. Like everybody said, you know, you try not to or whatever, or people say they tune it out, but when it's on and you listen to it or it's available and so many people have access to it, it's really hard. It's like, who do you trust? Because you would think like CBS, you would totally trust them. But hearing your story and it's just intriguing and it's super unfortunate. I can't even imagine a nonprofit going through that.
You know, when Steve Narduzzi and Val Giordano, the CEO and the COO, who were ultimately fired, and I'll get to that in a moment because that's itself is an interesting story. But when they heard this story, when they were watching, they knew it was coming. And when they watched on television in their boardroom that evening, and it was, by the way, a three-part story. It was one evening on a Tuesday night, and then the next morning, and then the next night on top of that. It was a three-part story, 2 days. And Steve says, and I quote him in the book saying this, it was not the organization, it was not the same organization. If you were to listen to it, you would think they're talking about somebody else. This was in no way the organization they were running, in no way. So you wonder, and I want to just reiterate just the other side of this for just a moment, because it's important. I have a high regard for CBS, and I have a high regard for the New York Times. I have a high regard for the Journal. I have the Wall Street Journal. I have a high regard for many, many organizations. But at the same time, I know that they can get it wrong. In this particular case, they got it really wrong, and it had such a horrible, horrible impact that it was newsworthy on that part alone. But you're right. Look, at the time, I was teaching board governance and ethical decision making at Columbia University. I was the director of the program, but I was also doing some teaching. And I told my students at the beginning of every semester, we have an agenda, we have a syllabus here in front of you, but I want you to know, students, that during this semester, something will happen in the real world of nonprofits where we will divert from what we are going to be studying to study a real world problem. This happened, and it happened every single semester. Something came along. And that's one of the great things about the course that I was teaching, but it's also true about how dynamic the nonprofit world is. Something's always happening. Could it be the Red Cross? Could it be Komen? Could it be Lance Armstrong? You know, it could be the Salvation Army. It didn't matter. I knew that something would be going on. And in this particular case, this happened. And I was thinking, well, we're going to do a class or two on how WWP screwed up. That was what I first thought. The very first moment that I saw this story, I thought, well, this is great fodder for the class. What happened, though, was that I got a call from a volunteer, and he said, this is not a true story. Now, why did I get a call from a volunteer? As I mentioned earlier, I had no connection with anybody at WWP. But what happened was that same week in late January 2016, as it happens, I had an article that was published in the Chronicle of Philanthropy that was very critical of an organization called Charity Navigator. And CBS News and New York Times both used Charity Navigator as a resource. They're the place where they got the 60-cent number as opposed to 80-cent number. Mm-hmm. And so I had criticized Charity Navigator, not because of this story, because I'd written this article before that, but because I don't think very much of Charity Navigator. Let's just hold that thought for a moment. I don't think they do a very good job. So the volunteer who read this called me and said, would you talk to the CEO and the COO and he didn't know where it was going to go. I was teaching at Columbia at the time. I said, sure, I'll be glad to talk to them, and I did. And they said, would you come down, and they're in Jacksonville and I'm in New York, would you come down and do a soup to nuts kind of review of our whole operation? I said I couldn't do it right then because I was full-time employed and I had done those kinds of things before, and I knew you can't hold a full-time job and do that kind of thing. It's just not the same thing. So I said, I don't think so right now. But then they said, well, we're having an audit done of our finances right now. The board had commissioned a law firm in New York to put together an audit right after the stories were put together, right in late January. And I said, okay. They said, after that is done, which would take about a month, they said, let's talk about this again. And I said, sure, I'd be glad to talk about it again. I didn't think I'd be able to do anything, but yeah, let's talk. The problem was that by the end of the month, they were gone. And what happened during that month was that law firm Simpson Thatcher did a review of the finances and concluded that all of the allegations in the media were basically incorrect. And what they did was they said that all of those allegations were incorrect, but it's pretty clear that these two guys have to be gone. These two guys who were the author of the success of this organization had to be gone. And that was even more confusing to me because not only did we have these stories that came out of nowhere that were all wrong and bad, but an independent third-party law firm concluded the same thing, that they were wrong, the stories were wrong, but that these guys had to go. That really didn't make any sense to me. And so I began to noodle on this for the next several weeks. That volunteer called back and said, now what's going on? Now these guys are gone and even less makes sense. And during that spring, during the February, March, April timeframe, or especially after March, after they were fired on March 9, 2016, during March and April, I gave a lot of thought to what I wanted to do. And this, I have to tell the both of you, Mary and Jennifer, that this is a passion of mine. Nonprofits that work well are so important to our society that we cannot allow anything to happen to this sector. It's just too important. And this was such an egregious story with such bad outcome. I couldn't get it out of my mind. I stayed up at night thinking about it. It wasn't personal to me in the sense that I had any connection to WWP. I didn't know Steve Gardese or Al Giordano. They weren't friends of mine. It wasn't like there was any personal connection, but I was still driven from a professional sense, saying, this is just not right. And I had spent a lot of time, and I put this in the book too, I spent a lot of time in the past criticizing charities because there are some pretty bad players trying to act charitable. And I hate that. So I want to protect our sector. But here is a story going the other direction. You know, here was a good charity, it looked like, where the allegations were incorrect. So I decided that spring, and the end of the academic year was coming up. I'd been at Columbia for a while. The administration was changing. We had a new dean. And I was thinking, regardless, I might want to make a change. I might just want to retire. I enjoy teaching. I enjoy research. I enjoy writing. I do not enjoy going to meetings at universities. Just so your listeners will know, Columbia and both Columbia and New York University are highly regarded universities. They're among the best in the world. That will not change in my view. But being in the administration of either of those two large organizations, and this is, I'm sure, true with almost every other university in the United States, is no fun because there's just a lot of administration activity. And more time was being taken away from my true love, which was teaching and writing. So I decided to make a career change, retire. And then on top of that, I wanted to spend time on this. I wanted to noodle on this. That's how important the story was to me. Nobody paid me a dime ever. And the only time I got any remuneration was when somebody bought me lunch here in New York City when they came to visit me. So this was not done with money or for money. It was done because of what I feel is we need to protect a very sacred part of our society, and that is the nonprofit sector. And that's what drove this story. And it turned into the book, the report, as you said earlier, and then the book, because the book outlines all of what went wrong and why.
Wow. And I can relate to the doing it for the passion. And if you don't have passion, you don't need to be doing it.
Well, that's why I wanted to spend a few minutes. I'm not trying to turn the tables here, but I do want to just highlight the fact that when we talked earlier, Mary, and when you joined us, Jennifer, on our three-way phone call, you told me you were a nonprofit, and you began this Be Unique effort because of a passion.
And absolutely.
I get that. You walked away from something else entirely, probably much more remuneratively satisfying because – yeah, because of a passion. And, you know, not all of us are going to go to GE and make $100 million a year. Not all of us are going to go to Facebook or to LinkedIn or to Apple, even though we might be qualified to do the work there, to make the kind of money those people at the higher echelons anyway make. And why is that? Because there are people in this world who really, really care about other people in the context of the way the nonprofit world addresses those concerns. And so what the nonprofit world does is unique. It does what neither government nor business will do. Neither one of those broad entities does what the nonprofit sector does, because there's no profit in it and there's no political gain in it. When I say there's no profit in it, let me be clear, because a lot of people have said, well, if it's a nonprofit, how can a charity make money? The reason it's a nonprofit is that there are no shareholders. The ownership of a nonprofit is that of the general public, as represented
absolutely
by two entities. Yes, and we need to keep that in mind. And so when you are a trustee or director of on the board of a trust of a charity, you have to keep that in mind, that you are caretaking these assets for the good of the public. And the overseer to that is the Attorney General of each state and the IRS, neither of which does a great job of overseeing, not because they're bad places. I don't mean to say that, but the reality is that there are a lot of charities and the oversight function is so large and the funding and budget for these activities is growing smaller and smaller that it's just becoming an impossible job. So over the last 10 to 20 years, I've noticed that the best oversight that the charitable sector can have and does have right now is provided through journalism. That's why when someone calls me from a newspaper or a radio station or I'm on a television program, I thank the journalist for taking the interest and say, I appreciate your interest in how a charity works, because this is how the public knows what goes wrong at charities. I used to teach, when I was teaching at NYU, I had as one of my adjuncts a person who was at the Charities Bureau at the New York State Attorney General's office, and they oversee the charity activity in New York State. And she told me that most of their tips come from stories in the news. And that's how they first get wind that something is wrong at a charity. So the role of the press, and I use that word broadly, that is to say the media and television, radio, and now websites and podcasts, is crucial. And I feel that, like for what you're doing and others, is so crucial that without it, we would not have the same kind of oversight. And we need that because charities play such an important role in our world. So you can understand, I guess, when I say the passion is so crucial to me that I just decided to make this a big production in my own life, and I hope people feel that, but I really hope people see what Wounded Warrior Project is, what these stories did. As I mentioned, it had a tremendously negative effect. So if I can turn the corner and go toward why CBS decided to be so negative and the effect on it, would that be okay for now? Can I do that with you guys?
Sure.
If you can, are you wanting to go into that right now?
Well, I was just asking you. I'm at your service.
You're certainly welcome to, but give me just a moment for a break here.
Oh my gosh, yes. Here I am.
Yeah. No, that's okay. We'll come right back to that.
I'm inspired to give back by the many individuals who are making a difference and taking steps to make the world better. Many people are tackling problems by themselves and thinking they are all alone in their efforts to make a change. I want them to know they are not going unnoticed. The world is watching. I'm part of a team helping to project their voices on a global scale. Small charities and solo entrepreneurs are doing amazing things but don't have the budgets to market themselves. Like many people, I once struggled in a variety of jobs I didn't care for, so I decided to find a new way to give back, to pay it forward, and to be the change. While some people my age are considering retirement, I've joined other professionals to create and manage a nonprofit organization called Peace Corps. The words that create our name tell only a small part of our giving story. We are philanthropists, educators, activists. We are compassionate, evolving, charitable, optimistic, responsible, and enthusiastic. We created Peace Corps so we can use our natural talents to help others. We work with nonprofits, individuals, and for-profit organizations that have a philanthropic outlook. Peace Corps uses several tools to give a voice to those that otherwise might not be known outside their small local circles. Be Unique magazine is released monthly and printed on demand. This digital interactive publication doubled in size within 5 months. During that same time, it attracted almost 60 volunteers from 12 countries and across the USA. These volunteers are professionals. They're performers and writers, editors, researchers, videographers, photographers, crew members, and so much more. Coffee or tea, no phones allowed. This fun show is hosted by millennials and provides insight into what they're thinking. But it's by no means intended to appeal only to that generation, as evidenced by their topics and their guests. Because our volunteers know that we are giving 100% of our beings to this organization, they are meeting us on our terms. Nobody earns anything. Yet we all work as if we are earning six-figure incomes. That is the epitome of giving. Curating the stories and creating a high-quality literary-style publication that not only highlights the good work of others, but projects positivity and inspiration gives me purpose. By giving myself to this organization, others want to give to Peace Corps. We have created a global giving circle.
Welcome back. This is Mary. I'm here with Jennifer East and Doug White, the author of Wounded Charity. And Doug has been fascinating, so fascinating that I've just about lost our time on the show. We have about 15 minutes left, and I really do want to hear you tell why you think CBS took that negative turn toward the Wounded Warrior Project.
Yeah, time goes flying by when you're having fun. I know that's a cliche, but I've been having a lot of fun talking to you, too, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
That's so good. Well, And I believe you have a lot more to say than we'll get in an hour. So I'm going to ask you right now that let's make a plan to have you come back on the show another time.
Let's do that because there's so much to unpack here. So we'll agree to that and we'll figure out the details later. But your question is why does CBS take such a negative tack? As I mentioned earlier, it wasn't until CBS got into the mix that the New York Times began changing its story. And so the question is, why did CBS get into the mix, and why do they get into it negatively, especially when someone on the board, this is so not intuitive, when someone on the board is working at CBS? You would think, I mean, the average person, I would think, that, there's somebody who works at CBS who's on the board of WWP is going to make sure that CBS does all the positive stories about WWP. You know, how is it possible that they would come up with such a horrible story about WWP? Well,
yeah, that's
the reason
strange.
I have to tell you that I'm speculating here because nobody on the board would talk to me. Doesn't that sound horrible? But they wouldn't.
And by the way,
just to kind of like jump to the very end of the storyline is that I do blame the board for all of this. I think the board was culpable for pretty much everything here. All right. So one of the board members was Richard Jones, this person who worked at CBS. He also had relationships with other nonprofits. He's a very well-known guy. And highly regarded guy in the veterans the veterans space, and does a lot of work for CBS in the veterans space. A lot of large companies, as you may realize, have sections of their work dedicated to helping veterans in whatever way or another. He's been one of the best and one of the most vocal and has a tremendous resume in this regard. On top of that, he's also in charge of CBS's finances. He's the senior vice president for finance at CBS Corporation.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah. So, by the way, when I talk about Dave Phillips at the New York Times and Chip Reed at CBS or Richard Jones, I criticize them on what they did. I don't impugn their character. I feel that these people are trying to do good things in the world, but they really did bad things in this particular case. But they're not bad mm-hmm. people, so let's just understand that's where I'm coming from. He had relationships with other organizations that did not have good relations with Wounded Warrior Project. As I mentioned earlier, they grew quickly, and they generated a lot of criticism. And so a lot of charities were basically jealous, you know, like, why can't we get that money, you know? And there were about, you know, there are thousands of veterans organizations in the United States. And I can't go into the details of why this is, so just permit me to say this as a general truth. Most of them are poorly run. They just don't have a large impact. They're not
right.
poorly motivated, but they don't have the money. They don't spend it that well. And it's just a bunch of stuff there. But they're not bad people. But there are thousands out there. And so Richard Jones is involved with a couple of others, and he still is, that did not have good relations with WWP. And I feel very strongly that jealousy was a large part of it. And he felt like these other organizations really deserve to have more money come in, or they deserve to have a better reputation, or they deserve to have a higher ranking or whatever. And WWP was standing in the way. That's number one. But number two, and much more tangible, is that he was also and is very connected to the Defense Department. Now, it's for our listeners right now, it's important to make this distinction that the Defense Department, which is basically overseeing all of our active duty personnel, is a very different organization from the Veterans Administration, which basically tries to help our veterans. The world
yes.
between active duty personnel and veterans is amazingly disparate. So, I learned this in my research. I thought, well, these guys have a great handoff. They're all kind of going in the same direction. On paper, they are, but in practice, a lot of veterans have difficulties that you would not expect them to have. And the relationship with the Defense Department isn't all that. Isn't as strong as many people would think. So Richard Jones has a good relationship with the Defense Department, not a bad thing in its own right. But here's the kicker. You just mentioned that you saw these ads on television. These ads were the most effective fundraising tool possibly by any charity in the history of the United States. It's called DRD TV, Direct Response Television. They are very expensive to get going, to crank up, but they are also the most efficient. So when you talk about fundraising costs and that kind of thing, they're the most efficient. Even though they're expensive to get going, they return the most for the dollar. Those ads were offensive to the Department of Defense because they showed people coming back from war wounded. And this was offensive to the Department of Defense because the narrative went like this. If people see, they watch these ads and they see veterans coming back wounded, they might not want to sign up for service. And I think there's a legitimacy to that concern. I'm not going to argue that that was a ridiculous concern. It's not. I did my own research on that particular point and found that it did not affect force readiness, which is their phrase for recruitment, and other ways to get people, men and women, into the armed forces. It did not affect negatively the force readiness numbers, but that was their stated concern, and they really didn't like those ads. They really, really wanted those ads off. In fact, the former Joint Chiefs of Staff, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Michael Mullen, asked Steve Nardese to take them off. And he didn't. And Steve Nardese said, look, you know, basically he didn't say it. I would have said this, but Steve is much more politic than I would be. He said that he wouldn't take these ads off, that they were very effective and nobody was being used. Everybody who was on the ads wanted to be on the ads. And it was an effective fundraising mechanism. It was also an effective education process for people who were watching. Because when we think about veterans, we're not really being confronted front and center with the disabilities, and they're physical as well as emotional. And the whole point of Wounded Warrior Project is to address those issues. So they felt, correctly, I believe, that these ads would send that message. So there was a goal to basically neuter that message. It was too raw, too negative for a lot of the people. And so that was the first, when they were fired and Wounded Warrior Project got a new CEO, after they were fired, I should say, before they got their new CEO, those ads were the first to go. They went off the air immediately. And
so they were working too well.
They were working too well. That's right. And sending, from the DOD's perspective, the wrong message. Now, the key thing to remember here is that although that actually has some resonance to me. I sympathize with that argument. But when as in sports, if you have a basketball team that wins a basketball game by 100-99, there's a victor and there's a loser. But the loser still scored 99 points. So the loser wasn't chopped liver, okay? It was a strong argument there. So I can understand this argument, but it was not as strong as Wounded Warrior Projects was to raise the money to do their work. So they kept the ads on, and that's one of the reasons they were fired. The two guys were fired. And so now they have a much more milquetoast relationship with DOD, and those ads are a lot less raw than they used to be. That, I think, was the goal. And I think Richard Jones played a very large role in that. And that's speculation.
Unfortunately, you know, someone as big as the DOD can dictate certain things. And it's sad because the two, you know, WWP and DOD work together. So, I mean, the ultimate goal is to serve veterans. But
yes.
I think the DOD was thinking, well, we won't have any veterans for you to serve if we can't keep our recruitment up. And it's kind of a little twisted way of looking at that. But that's the way
the
machine works.
Yeah, that would be the extension of the logic is what I was going to say. You're absolutely correct. I think that is the argument. And it is twisted. Look, I say this at the very beginning of the book. First of all, let me just say the charities, including WWP, are the sentinel of our public trust, and that's why we have to maintain the independence and the integrity of charities. There is that. But then on top of that, Where do veterans fit into this? And veterans are America's treasure. You know, without their service and that of their fallen comrades, who knows what this country would be? The consequences to the United States would be totally unthinkable. So I want this to be seen as an ode to the veterans. And I also feel very strongly that we need a good military. And I know that many people will disagree about this, the size of the military, what the size should be and what our objectives should be. But those are political consequences of military decisions. And we're not in that sphere when we talk about helping veterans in the nonprofit level. So I totally understand robust, that's I guess a good way to put it, debates can take place about the role the policies that politicians make and the way the military executes those decisions. That's all great, and that's not my wheelhouse. But in terms of the veterans, the reality is, and this I spent an hour and a half with Dave Phillips on this very point. And that's why I felt betrayed by his story. We both agreed. I said, look, in a perfect world, the Veterans Administration would take care of the veterans. And he said something that I agree with even more. And he said, in a perfect world, there would be no wars. I said, good for you. Let's have a drink on that one.
Yeah, that's a cliche right there.
Right. But, you know, it's not the truth. I mean, that's not the way the world turns. So let's figure out how to deal with these veterans. If it were up to me, we would take a lot more care on a government level to make sure these guys and gals come home and are well cared for. They're not through the veterans organizations. That's why we see these nonprofits spring up all over the place, these well-meaning nonprofits, and they augment what the Veterans Administration does. And this is, people might hear the Veterans Administration say, well, you're so corrupt for the last, century. And yeah, they've had their issues. But even if they were a real well-running machine, the Veterans Administration still couldn't take care of what they need to take care of with regard to our wounded men and women coming home. That's why these nonprofits are so important. And so they do need to have good relationships. But it's also true that Wounded Warrior Project, before this crisis, had good relationships with not only the DOD, other than for the ads, because they didn't like the ads, but also with the Veterans Administration. They were working closely to make sure that there was a good handoff and that there was a way for the veterans to get their benefits from the Veterans Association. And where there wasn't a benefit that was deemed worthy, the organizations like Wounded Warrior Project would come in and fill that gap. WWP worked with many, many charities around the country because, you know, they're a national organization and many veterans organizations are local. And so they can't do the same things that WWP does, but it's also true. And this is something they knew. WWP can't do the kind of local work that a lot of the local organizations do. So they were helping them do that financially.
Right.
So there's a lot of work for the the interaction of these organizations to help veterans.
Doug, I have to interrupt you. I have to run one quick little ad, and then I want to come back and make sure everybody knows how to contact you.
Sure.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org.
Okay, we are back. Doug, tell everybody how they can reach you, how they can buy your book. And then we'll discuss another time how we're going to have you back on the show, because there's a lot more to talk about.
There really is. And I thank you for your interest. I can see you're interested and have a sincere interest in making this issue front and center with not only your listeners, but also everyone else in the United States. And thank you for the opportunity for helping
me. You're very welcome.
spread that word.
Doug, I have my own wounded warrior as a son, so it's a very dear subject to me.
Well, then, I'm speaking to someone directly involved. And it's funny,
yes.
It's not funny, but it's interesting how many people have a loved one who has served. And the words escape me right now, but thank you. Thank your son for me, for his service.
You're very welcome.
My email address is open to the world. It's dwhitepg. That's D-W-H-I-T-E. P as in Paul, G as in giving, at gmail.com. And I welcome anybody, and I get back to everybody who writes. And, we can always set up a phone call if one wishes, but we can do that through there. But all of my information is on my website as well, dougwhite.net. And just Google it, and you'll find it. But the email is the best thing because, I'll get it, and I'll respond to it.
Excellent.
Oh, and
thank you so much for
being
with us tonight. I look forward to talking with you again because there's a lot of – I think I asked you one question, and then you just took over the show. I've got more questions for you I want to ask for another time.
and my apologies. My kids.
No, do not apologize. You're the ideal guest. I ask one question, and I don't have to ask any more. This was great. I really, really, really appreciate you being here tonight. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being with you.
And thank you for what you're doing for nonprofits, because you're right. Philanthropy is such it's a much needed entity in this world, because we can't rely on the governments to do the things that need to be done.
Yes, that's correct.
So with that, I will say good night.
And good night to you, and thank you.
You're welcome.
Good night,
good night, Jennifer.
Great show. Thank you.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did. Be sure to come back the first and third Thursday of each month for more exciting guests, and if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there. That's BUNEKE.org.